Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Powerhouse Perspective, Empowering Leaders for Business Breakthroughs. I am Scott Medeiros, the president of HelmWise, and this is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood Family of Companies. We're recording this in the month of January. So one of the topics that we want to talk about today is how do you position your organization to be successful in the upcoming year? So first of all, Happy New Year to everyone. And here at the Rosewood Family of Companies, we went through something we call the Annual Primary Objective, APO. And so we want to talk a little bit about that and how organizations must spend some time either at the end of the past year or the beginning of the new year in order to get their organization collectively aligned in order to be successful in the new year. So Chandler, we went through this exercise. You've initially picked it up through C12, but I know through my reading of business frameworks that every framework has a strategy component and something that actually tries to get them aligned around who they are and what they want to accomplish. So what was your experience and why did the APO suddenly resonate with you, perhaps different than traction or some of the other things?
APO has actually hit us from a couple different directions. So in one of our cohorts, we have business leaders come to our event down at the coast of North Carolina. One of the participants mentioned Amazon putting news headlines up before they launch an initiative. Basically, the news headline is, when successful, this is what we want the headline to read. At the same time, finishing out the year at C12, which is a great organization for Christian business leaders that challenges you monthly on different aspects of business, some of them fundamental. Mm-hmm. End of year is a big planning focus. So the last session of December had the annual primary objective. And just sitting there trying to get really tight on what will drive the business spoke to me. We always do what we call VTOs from EOS, a vision traction organizer. So we do always have, you know, a strategy and a budget mm-hmm. and a plan mm-hmm. and all mm-hmm. the things you see. But getting much, much more crystallized on just a rallying cry, an annual primary objective. And so living your values, driving success is what we're going with for 2025. I think the main purpose of that has come to fruition because we over-rotated slightly, so I don't want you to think that it's a big amount. I was speaking down in San Antonio just last week. We moved to a position very much metrics, process,
yes.
KPI focus, delivering extremely accurately to scopes of works and SLAs, delivering exactly what customers and clients spec'd out what they wanted, and we delivered it really well. And lost business.
Yes.
And a couple of our organizations, and people say, well, you did a great job. Why didn't it work out? This should reward the great work. And at the end of the day, when you rotate that slight bit too much towards the operational side and not the relationship and focusing on the values, you lose the personal connection. And when you lose the personal connection, you are basically viewed even as a service, like a commodity. And even commodities don't want to be viewed as commodities. You want to build some rapport, you want to be dependable, you want to be reliable, you want to have your values be the first thing a customer thinks about, not your product or your service. So the relationship has to be at least, you know, I'm making a number up, but it's close, so I would say 51% mm-hmm. values and relationship, 49% operations, process, and scaling, and I think that 1% to 2% is dramatic in the impact. And so as I've gone out with some of our leaders, met with some clients where we aren't doing quite as much work as we had in the past, no complaints about our delivery, but actual quote from one of the major Fortune 20 businesses in the country is, we miss you. And so they don't miss the fact that we did the work. They miss the fact that we are not in relationship with them.
Right.
And right. So I don't know, I view it kind of akin to, you see it in the movies all the time, the parent or the husband, that we gave you everything you needed. And they said, all we wanted was a relationship. Well, I think that applies in business as well. And so that's the genesis of this year's annual primary objective, is to live that out. And how do you live that out? Our core values should be integrated. We've talked about it here before, not as guardrails or frameworks, but integrated in how we approach business, whether that's onboarding, building budgets, building plans for the year, how we talk and interact with clients, how we train people, everywhere throughout, even how we discipline, how we offboard people. You should be living out our values. And so, Scott, you've been here a while, certainly drawn on the values. Maybe you can lay out those values and maybe an example of how would you apply those values to a practical business objective. I think we had a conversation on strategy a while back, and it kind of came out, but...
We did, and so much of what you just talked about, I was sitting here kind of reflecting over the past nearly 6 years as part of Rosewood. And 6 years ago, if you would have talked to me about relationship, I would have said it's all about the numbers, it's all about the metrics, it's all about the execution, it's all about the deliverables, and really the statement of work, right? If you deliver, and well, first of all, if you define the statement of work very, very accurately, and then you deliver against that statement of work, you're automatically going to have business success. And it wasn't until I arrived here at the Rosewood family of companies and working specifically as the EVP of operations for ProVantage that this relationship piece really started to become apparent to me. Coming from large enterprise, you get a bit distant from the true end customer. When you're working at the senior levels of a Fortune 50 company, you know, you're working hard, you're doing a lot of things. It's a lot of metric driven, as you mentioned. And you tend to be a little bit more, I would say, almost robotic in what you're doing, right? You're coming up with themes. There's still marketing and things like that going on, but it's really more metric driven. You're tracking your KPIs. You're tracking anything that gives you an indication of the trends and where things are going. But here, coming to Rosewood, and again, one of the things that attracted me to Rosewood were the values. And I think our focus on the values, and if you focus on that, like we say, living our values, driving success. If we focus on the values, then the results are going to come in. It's not focusing on the numbers, it's focusing on the relational piece. So if you look at our values of do the right thing, or if you look at we before me, or you look at grace through generosity, three of our five values, if you do those things, it's going to develop that relationship. And naturally, you want to do a good job in order to live up to those values. More importantly, it's now a more human experience versus a very sterile experience. And so when things do go wrong, you now can draw upon the relationship, where if you're purely executing by the numbers and the numbers don't match, somebody wants a consequence. So we got to get away from the consequence and more of the understanding working together. And I think that's where our new annual primary objective really makes it work much better than my initial view of metrics-driven execution.
Sure, and we've talked a lot about purpose here and your why and the importance of the work that, you know, Simon Sinek is not the originator, but certainly the most popular in recent history of kind of bringing that into the business world with all of his info on YouTube and TED Talks and those type things. But I was at an event and they had a gentleman called the Iron Cowboy, which I referred to you to go take a look, who's run tons of Ironmans, really dedicated his life to reaching goals that seem unattainable, but also doing them with a purpose for his family, for women trapped in sex slavery, things like that. He had a why, and quoted Viktor Frankl, and if you have a worthy why, high enough purpose, you can endure anyhow. And just reflecting on that, we cover that some at our events and certainly quote Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp going in. He was a psychologist. He decided that he wanted to come out, still the husband, loving his wife, mm-hmm. and still have the marriage. That was the thing. His purpose was to survive, remain a human, because you can lose your humanity, obviously, if you actually survive the concentration camp, and go back to his wife and his marriage. So that was his why, his purpose, so he could endure anyhow. Laying that on top of what we're talking about of living your values, driving success, I guess I take a little bit of an issue now, thinking through it more deeply with the how, because how you achieve your purpose to me is just as important. So if he had sold out other Jews in the concentration camp mm-hmm. or become a Nazi spy in order to survive to get to
Correct.
His wife,
Correct.
Would that be an admirable life? Would the purpose have been served properly? And so I think the how is where your values govern your behavior, how you do it. And so I think how you pursue your purpose to me is almost paramount, more important than actually reaching your purpose, because your example of how you pursued it, you think of great heroes throughout history, great movies, great books, how they went about their mission and their purpose was really the inspiration. Like, it's great to see them win and to make it, but it was the effort they willingly put in to endure the pain and suffering with attributes we think are noble that made us really excited about watching a Rocky or watching war heroes or things like that. It wasn't actually the win in the ring. It was the when Rocky, you know, ascended to the top of the steps in Philadelphia at the museum and held his arms up. They put up, you know, they put a statue in Philadelphia for that. That wasn't winning the championship. It was the work in the meat locker, the running, the steps, the
correct.
And so, how you go about it. So I would say that if you have a worthy why and you pursue the how with virtuous values, then I think you can endure whatever you have to do to get there. And so I think it is a layer deeper than just a high enough purpose you can endure anyhow. I think it's a high enough purpose pursuing the how with values, and you can endure whatever it takes to make it.
Yes, so now you've got me a little curious, because one of the things I did in preparing for this particular podcast episode is I was kind of going back through some of the business frameworks and seeing if all of the different frameworks had a annual primary objective element to it. And of course, most of them have a strategy component, whether it's traction from Gino Wickman, whether it's scaling up from Vern Harnish, whether it's the advantage from Patrick Lencioni, all of them have this piece of strategy. But when you look at it, it's actually been broken down into a very step-by-step process. It's more sterile, as I mentioned earlier, than it is emotional. You know, you have answer these 8 questions or answer these 6 questions or follow these 4 pieces. And it becomes almost scientific in the way in which strategy is developed. But I think your part about the worthy why, about the how, and you even mentioned with the Rocky, it's not about the step-by-step. It's about the more emotional drive, the motivation, the inspiration, the understanding. And I'm curious as to why we build frameworks very systematically, which we know is important, and we get away from the more softer emotional connection piece. Why do you think that is? Is it because you can't define it very clearly? What's been your experience as a CEO?
Certainly the definition, to your point, and we want to put as much, I would say the test is how much process, how much definition can you put in place and not crush the spirit, and that's all. And even that statement is something that is very hard to objectively define, because you know that also depends on how much you rally your employees, what obstacle are they facing, are they in a growth mode, a decline mode, a startup? You know, where is the business in its cycle and the environment it's in? Mm-hmm. Depends heavily. We talk about whether you sway more on the emotional or more on the process and operation side.
Yeah.
I do think that a relevant example for us is we have had situations where we processed, we have tracked, we have put in reports by the hundreds, if not thousands, to understand everything an employee does, to reward them, to build out systems that are, you know, highlighting the good things, giving rewards, also showing people where they have room for improvement. All these amazing metrics were put in. And my challenge to that leader was, do the employees want to do it?
Yeah.
If they don't have the will to do it, they are not machines. It's not a robot. We are not programming a computer. Just because you put all the ones and zeros in order, and it should output this at the end of a conveyor system or onto a screen for a computer, they're people. And if they don't want to do it, you know, it will not be effective. And it may be effective to deliver what you expect it to deliver, but the return on it overall, long-term, in my experience, is not very good. It dwindles. Because the next person, we had this discussion, which was sidetracked. When I was first practicing law years ago, we'd go talk to the law practice management class at Wake Forest. And I would tell the class, I said, you know, one of the main reasons not to be a jerk as an attorney is, even if you are that good, as soon as someone they like is close to as good as you are, or you fail, you're out. They will replace you with someone who is possibly slightly less talented than you. And as soon as that mistake, when it inevitably happens, comes, you're done. And so as a long-term business strategy, yeah. you are hoping you're feeding enough people to replace the ones you're losing because of your arrogance and your reputation, and some survive that way. But at the end of the day, when it all runs off the track and you need help, and it's a problem out of your control, and you need your clients and your vendors to help you survive a situation that's difficult, downturn in the economy, something out of your control, and you stick your hand up, why in the world would they help pull you out of that situation? They'll ask where your process and your planning and your SOW is now, and you'll have earned no credits for as a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about it now because, as we all know, I'm more operationally minded, and I was considering, you know, why is it more attractive to me? And I think it's because it's safer, right? It gives the impression that if you can do things, quote unquote, right, if you follow the steps, you will get the result. But we've also said, as soon as you add a human into the equation, it becomes very, very dynamic, and you can't treat it like a robot because there are emotions and other things that are involved in that now relationship dynamic. And so I'm going, I think back to John Maxwell, who defined leadership as leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. Influence is not something you can define. It isn't like, hey, here's influence, right? You pick it up, you put it on the table. It's very subjective, right? And what influences you may be different than what influences me. But as a leader, and now as we think about this annual primary objective, you know, what are those things that are going to resonate, rally the people in the organization? As you mentioned, we could define it as accurately as possible, but if they don't buy in emotionally and come in with their motivation and push through hard times, all these things, again, that aren't black and white, then the organization isn't going to be successful. So our rallying cry, as we talked about, is living the values, driving success. How do we get that adopted or ingrained into an organization? Because it's going to take the collective group. Even if you and I could agree at more senior levels in the organization, we're not the ones who are executing in the field.
Sure. I mean, the thing you have to go back to with the people in the field and people that work within your organization is that it is 51-49 to me. It's that close. And so what you have to do is the process has to be there. The scope of work is the, you know, ticket to the party, admission to the party. Mm-hmm. If you want to do business with any organization or you want to have clients, you must deliver on expectations, which hopefully, to your point, we've defined. But that just says, all right, they've delivered. And then that also only allows you to maintain a seat at the table. It does not move you up the ranks unless everyone else is falling and it's just attrition. But in general, both your employees, your teammates, whatever you want to call them, and your clients, you have to tie those values directly to the ops and the process. That's why it's not 50-50, I don't think, anymore, so it's not a true yin and yang. But if you can't talk about how spirit of excellence actually impacts a project that your employees are working on all the way down to the entry-level employee, and you can't also articulate to the client how spirit of excellence, what that means. It means we respect everyone involved in this. They're going to do the best they can what they're given.
Right.
We're going to deliver excellence at all levels. For a person, take ProVantage, who does, you know, projects inside retail stores, I say, hey, we think excellence is when something's behind the cabinet that no one else will see. Excellence is taking the time to go around there. Doing the right thing is the time to go around and clean up that trash, to put the extra effort in. And if we can get people to buy in that respect and self-respect come from living out the values, we would say spirit of excellence says deliver to the highest standard.
Correct.
Do the right thing, yeah, says go behind there. Innovate to elevate says always look for ways to deliver it with better quality, right, better speed, better value. Grace through generosity is certainly, you know, hey, we tried something new, it didn't work, or something unexpected. You can't be always driving with the hammer, or people will never be creative. And so we know that doesn't happen very well. And so we before me is the lowest level employee, it's the client, it's the company itself, it's also ownership. All those things are we. And so we collaborate, you know, we cooperate with each other in order to deliver all those things. And so you have to get very specific. You have to weave it in to your issues that you're dealing with each week or month. You have to put it into your, you know, quarterly rocks we use from VTO, your 1 year, your 3 year, your 5 year. Why emotionally does this help us fulfill our purpose? And then why is it important to pursue that purpose with the values? And how does that value tie directly to the actual process, the nuts and bolts of scope of work, all the things that you're expert at have to be right alongside and woven into the discussion. Otherwise, it's just fluff, which is what most operations people call it, fluff.
Yeah, exactly right.
And
exactly
so if you do not tie it together, it is fluff. I don't disagree. I think it is a bunch of puffery.
Well, if I look across the different frameworks as I sit here and think about them, I think probably the one that is best or closest to what we're talking about, more towards the human side of things, is the work by Patrick Lencioni. So if you go to The Advantage, he'll talk about, and actually has a whole separate book on it, but he'll talk about, obviously, you got to have a good leadership team, step one. Step two is creating clarity, right? And clarity, by its very nature, injects communication. And then the third step in the process is to over-communicate that clarity. So you created it, now you're going to over-communicate it, and the fourth and final step is reinforce the clarity. And so it's all about getting that alignment. And it reminds me, yesterday we were on a cohort interstitial with John Stallworth. And one of the questions I wanted to ask during that session was, we talk a lot about the leadership and the human aspect of leadership. But over my now 40-year career with the military and the civilian side of the house, I'm trying to think back, how often did I see senior leaders interacting with the members of the organization, right? And so one of the questions I was going to ask John Stallworth yesterday was, what percentage of time, given his opinion, what percentage of time should a leader be spent in conversation with those within the organization versus checking over the financials, you know, heading up a strategy meeting and those sort of things? What would be your guess at the percentage of time that someone should spend communicating clarity? Or in this case, getting people to buy into the rallying cry or the annual primary objective?
Frankly, more than I do.
So yeah.
I'm not that good at it.
I'm guilty of it as well. That's why I thought it was a great thing to throw on the table.
I think most leaders that are hard driving, it's easy, which is certainly another quote you can bring, I think, from Maxwell. It's easy to just drive and forget to take the time to go out and bring the people along with you.
Yes.
And so it's hard. I think that ratio is much higher than the 51-49. I think that's got to be a 80-20 or higher, because at the end of the day, you as the leader should not be doing much of the work, not the actual physical production of scopes of work, process. You should be the vision creator somewhat. Even if you're an ops driven person, you have to lay the vision of the ops. That's still your job. And that's a hard thing for an ops person to internalize, is a lot of books use the term visionary and integrator. So it's an EOS term, but it's common, is that you get people who are very good ops people and people who are very good at casting vision. The reality is they both have to cast vision. One is just a creator of vision. And the other one, to me, is an iterator and a visionary in how to
activator of that
activator
vision.
That's excellent. And but they still are innovating to elevate all the time. They're very creative, they just don't realize it. They're creative in how do you build the scope, how do you build the process, how do you get the people, you know, in that location with the right team, with the right project, with the definition, with the training, execute, communicate the I mean, it's not easy to execute. That's a lot of creativity, it's a lot of work, but it is in your definition, I think one reason it's attractive is it is somewhat in a box. The parameters are known. And so I think the visionary, in the sense of the one coming up with stuff that's maybe not so clearly defined, once you kind of define it, you pass it off to the visionary that is actually called an integrator, who is still doing a ton of creating. And so we pigeonhole those two, I think, too much, but the qualities of both are very different. Sort of the way they play, where they play, I guess, is the way I would look at it.
Yeah, and I would agree that whether you're a visionary or an integrator, the communication is the key element in both. right? Communicating the vision, having others be able to see your vision, being able to articulate it well enough, even for the integrator to say, hey, I get it. Let me go decompose that into how we can activate and execute against it. But even when it gets to that point, the integrator now must communicate around all the things we talked about. Why are we doing this? The worthy why. You know, you get the how, you've got the values, focusing on doing things right in accordance with the values to generate the results. So it's definitely a communication piece in there. And as I was sitting here thinking about it, I was, it's, you know, the human piece isn't, it isn't observable. And what I mean by that is we tend to, and we grow up, especially as an individual contributor and working your way up through the hierarchy of any organization, you build it by doing. You're producing something. You're producing a spreadsheet. You're producing a widget. It's something almost physical that you can say. And if someone were just talking to someone, you're like, well, get to work, right? It's sort of that concept that you should be doing something that is going to generate a tangible result. And we underestimate the importance of communication to have those discussions. And so if you spent 80% of your time as a senior leader in the organization talking to people, people will be like, well, we're paying them a lot of money just going around and talk to people. But in reality, that is the most important thing that you actually can do is get people aligned. So I think we were kind of swayed to think that that's not important because we can't see it, when in reality, it's very, very important. And we could see that with sales, right? We talk people who go out. Without a salesperson, there's no one making the rain. Therefore, there's nothing really to deliver. But it's really about communication and connection.
I think that's critical. I do think one thing that we've discussed that's interesting for those of you who are, you know, listening that may be more of an ops-focused person versus the visionary is that one of the things Scott and I have discussed just on side, not directly to businesses, I do think for an integrator or an ops-driven person, they have to operate more on faith.
Yes.
And that's a difficult thing because that is literally the opposite of creating scopes of work and process. You must have faith that the process, integrating values matters. You must have faith when you're explaining why we exist, how do we behave, how does that impact these great processes I created. Mm-hmm. Many times, that individual doesn't actually see the connection. They just have to step out and wait on the long-term results to manifest. There's no, if I do this for 90 days, it will produce X amount of employees that will buy in, which will increase productivity by, I do think you'll see increases in productivity, but the win and the direct correlation that you can kind of trace backwards to, I started saying this 180 days prior, this outcome, well, to a very lean Six Sigma black belt like you, well, you could say, if I started this process 180 days out, I will deliver this conveyor belt system, which will deliver this number of widgets, which will deliver it with this accuracy. So the hard thing on the ops side, certainly the integrator side, is faith. I think the hard thing on the visionary side is humility. They think they can see everything and see it better than everyone else, and they take for granted the fact they haven't communicated it well enough to the integrator so they can continue to build processes to deliver and evangelize it enough for the integrator to have faith in it. You can't ask an ops person to have faith in your vision if you can't articulate and correlate the vision to somewhere you're trying to go, which is where you get into that 49% of where are you trying to go? Have you defined it? How are we going to get there? What's the impact? How do we know if we're moving in the right direction or not? We might not know how quick the result is, but we still have to measure, like we talk about. You got to reckon along the way of, which is basically track KRAs, KPIs, whatever you decide to use. So you can't abandon either one. But I think it starts with proper vision, some humility of the visionary listening to the op side to say, hey, we're not prepared to deliver that. And also the ability to push back and say, I know you're usually risk adverse, so I see something that's worth the risk. It's still their job to communicate it, but then the hard part on the op side is faith. It is stepping out into the unknown if we're going to pursue something that's not drawn out in a plan, that's a 50-point business plan.
Well, by design, innovation is stepping into the unknown, right?
That's the goal.
Yeah, you're evolving to something that doesn't exist yet. And I will say from an operational standpoint, that can be very uncomfortable because you want clarity. You want clarity, you want confidence. And that can be a great thing when you get to the delivery piece. But unless you're willing to have some faith, you're never going to get to the delivery piece.
Well, I think that's where the values come in. I mean, you've heard me say it many times, is if you are operating the how, like we spoke about, in accordance with the values, you certainly don't abandon where you're trying to go. But if you don't make it and you ran the race well, it takes off some of that pressure of, you know what? Yes, we more than anything, we want to achieve the next business goal, the next career goal. But if I don't make it and I self-reflect, am I going to say that I did it in the proper manner, in the way that I stated my values in accordance with those things? Did I do all the work? Did I do all the process? But did I do it in a way that is respectable, virtuous, I guess is what we're kind of moving to? That to me builds a lot of almost faith, ability to take risk, because at the end of the day, we really don't, we could do all the things perfect, and the reality is we control very little. So economy changes, inflation, war, you know, COVID, all the things that we have no control over. So it's a false sense of security that, no, if we kept it in this box, we ran it this way, it will produce this output. I don't think that's very accurate. I think that's just as it's just as much faith as faith in going after the virtues and the purpose. You have faith that this world, everything outside will stay the same, and therefore the process will deliver. It's just as much a leap of faith as...
Yeah, it sure is. Sure is. One of the things I was also thinking about, we now have our values checklist that we go through every single week in a couple of seven items. It is. It's very tough. But as I was sitting here thinking across going through that checklist, which we do once a week, I'm going, I can't think of any item off the top of my head that was objective driven, or, hey, did you, you know, deliver X amount of widgets, or did you, I don't know, count this? It's all human driven. Did you reach out to someone? Did you encourage someone? Did you support someone? Did you do something for someone aside from yourself? Did you contribute to the community? It all goes back to the same concept of human interaction, connection, alignment. You know, going back to Helmwise and the orient, align, and reckon, that's still in there as well. That comes into everything we talked about in the core four within the Helmwise cohort. Of humility, sacrifice, stewardship, and legacy. It's all folded in there. And you're now giving me an idea in real time here on how can I bring the importance of communication and make it more, more obvious in operations. Because in operations, like I said, being a Lean Six Sigma black belt or being a project manager or even being in some cases change, you're looking to execute against a certain things in a certain time frame, and it becomes very, very metric driven. When in reality, it should be human driven. Because if you get the human on board, they will deliver against the metrics.
Well, right? This is the part where you talk about your crew. I mean, the reality is you're not going to all of a sudden become me, and I'm certainly not going to become you. Actually, we we talk a lot about intentionally not becoming the other person.
Yes, complimenting. Yes.
Don't try to present like the other person. Don't try to lead the same way. Certainly, if there's areas to improve, talk about those. But in reality, I think it is much more of a mistake to turn into this mushy meld of, rather than find, to your point, compliments. So on the ops side, we've spoken about find another ops person that is much more of a get out to the people, a much more... Not that you don't improve your ability, but the reality is you will not become, you know, a center will not become a running back at a football team. I don't care how much they think the running back is cool, how much they think it's valuable, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. They are critical. All are critical to the success. So you really got to think about that. I think that, you know, when we talk about making sure we do these things that align with your value, to me, it brings up an old question of, would you rather have a fear of failure or a fear of regret?
Yeah.
And so every person you ever read about that has their deathbed kind of regrets, it's not usually I made this calculation wrong. It's did I put enough effort into a relationship, enough effort into training, enough effort, did I actually go about it? Did I run the race well is what they're generally. Did I spend enough time building relationship with the kids or the wife or the, you know, showing people and communicating? which is a big one they come back to. It's not a check the box. But if all you did was run around telling everybody you love them and you didn't actually go to work and produce and keep them safe and feed them and house them, you know, how much did you love them? That's a question as well. So you can't, again, this, we're talking the narrow path, I guess would be the way I look at it. It's a narrow gap between slightly on the value side, slightly on the purpose side, but by no means neglecting the emphasis on the process and procedure side.
Yeah, and it's also reminding me of, if you think into exit planning, one of the biggest things that what keeps organizations from unlocking the value in organizations is the fact that it's all in the owner's head, right? And they haven't articulated it or passed it on to others in the organization and almost franchise the organization so a new buyer can come in, take it, move it forward, and the owner can then move on. But that becomes, you know, into the same sort of area where I'm thinking about the acquisition of knowledge should not be the goal. The goal should be to share that knowledge. And so we've talked about it with John, another John Maxwell quote, you know, be a river, not a reservoir, right? Be constantly adding and pushing things forward and adding value to people. And it comes back to operations again, right? Again, how are we communicating to others how to do things, why to do things, because that's the most important things that, or contribution you can make. So I just think that this it's always been there. We have always known as communication is important. We talk about it within the Shipworks and in the Helmwise methodology, that the communication is a linchpin that keeps all the other operational components together. But the bottom line is that it needs to be executed against. We've got to talk more. And well, we've got to see it as being important.
There's a big difference in how types of communication. And so I think that's where people, they think if they give more directives that they're communicating
yes,
more.
Yes,
directives
correct.
Are
correct.
A form of communication, but probably I'd call them when your communication is strictly, there's always utility to it. So I don't want to pretend like there's not always some utility. But when it is strictly utilitarian, do these three things to accomplish this task. That is communication. It's crucial, but it is extremely baseline. And so if you want more to the relationship, you want more buy-in, you want people to go above and beyond, to feel comfortable, to feel part of the organization and the purpose and live the values, you have to talk about those things. And so it's when you push these out, a lot of times everyone wants to then get robotic. Well, I'm going to read, Bob. Yes, read it, but take 5 seconds to talk about why you think
there
it's
you
important.
Go.
It doesn't
right.
take a long time. We're talking...
Right.
5 minutes, 10 minutes. It's not a big lift to communicate outward, and that's different than something you and I struggle out, which is going out and pulling the people into the relationship, which takes more time right. for sure than communicating. So I think that's important. Legacy is a big part you brought up a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, we had a couple of gentlemen on the interstitial that Scott spoke about that are, you know, serving leader, much more senior, have worked with a lot of organizations, Ted Sturgeon. But, you know, what happened in the generational, I think, is they skipped stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
And so stewardship was that the entity that provides the jobs, the services, the we, it makes the we possible. So we want to make money as the owners. We want to provide opportunities for jobs. We want to give the services at a high level. We want to help our clients and partners. We want our vendors to have business because they're good vendors. Stewardship, if you skip that and go to my family as opposed to the entity, the business, then you get things that are detrimental. You have swapped out the order. You can't skip stewardship. And so when you're communicating, are you communicating for you? Are you communicating for what's best for the business
right.
and the purpose?
Right.
And so your employees, yeah. especially I found lower level employees, they sense that. They have a very good radar for that. And that antenna picks mm-hmm. up really quickly when it's self-serving communication as opposed to we before me communication.
Exactly. So I'm going to bring it full circle. We started out talking about the annual primary objective, and we kind of quickly transitioned into communication because it is important. So first of all, you got to spend time coming up with that rallying cry or that theme, and then spend the time throughout the organization, from the senior visionaries all the way into the integrators and down to the people in the field, to ensure they get that organizational clarity. So we're going to wrap it up with that. Make sense? Final words?
No, it's critical. I think that goal for the year, rallying cry, is important, and I think it'll give you something to sync up your communications and all your operational processes for the year. So thanks, Scott.
Fantastic. Appreciate it. Thank you all. We'll see you next time on the Powerhouse Perspective. Cheers.
Take care.